Chapter 75. Of course my friend declined to buy a quarter interest in the 50. A. L for $200, 000. I judged he would. I hoped he would offer $100, 000, but he didn't. If the cholera breaks out in America, a few months hence, we can't borrow or sell. But if it doesn't, we must try hard to raise $100, 000. I wish we could do it before there is a cholera scare. I have been in bed 2 or 3 days with a cold, but I got up an hour ago, and I believe I am all right again. How I wish I had appreciated the need of $100, 000 when I was in New York last summer. I would have tried my best to raise it. It would make us able to stand 1,000 sets of 50. A. 50. Per month, but not anymore, I guess. You have done magnificently with the business, and we must raise the money somehow, to enable you to reap the reward of all that labor. Sincerely yours, S50. Clemens. Whitmore, in this letter, was F.G. Whitmore, of Hartford, Mark Twain's financial agent. The money due from Mrs. Dodge was a balance on Tom Sawyer Abroad, which had been accepted by St. Nicholas. Mr. Elsie was a downtown broker. Clemens, who was growing weary of the constant demands of 50. A. L. had conceived the idea that it would be well to dispose of a portion of it for enough cash to finance its manufacture. We don't know who the friend was to whom he offered a quarter interest for the modest sum of $200,000. But in the next letter we discover designs on a certain very canny Scotchman of Skibo. To Fred J. Hall, in New York. Florence, January 28, 92. Dear Mr. Hall, I want to throw out a suggestion, and see what you think of it. We have a good start, and solid ground under us. We have a valuable reputation. Our business organization is practical, sound and well devised. Our publications are of a respect-worthy character, and of a money-breeding species. Now then I think that the association with us of someone of great name, and with capital, would give our business a prodigious impetus. That phrase is not too strong. As I look at it, it is not money, merely that is needed. If that were all, the firm has friends enough who would take an interest in a paying venture. We need someone who has made his life a success, not only from a business standpoint, but with that achievement back of him, has been great enough to make his power felt as a thinker and a literary man. It is a pretty usual thing for publishers to have this sort of partners. Now you see what a power Carnegie is, and how far his voice reaches in the several lines I speak of. Do you know him? You do by correspondence or purely business talks about his books, but personally, I mean, so that it would not be an intrusion for you to speak to him about this desire of mine, for I would like you to put it before him, and if you fail to interest him in it, you will probably get at least some valuable suggestions from him. I'll enclose a note of introduction. You needn't use it if you don't need to. Yours, S50. C. P.S. Yes, I think I have already acknowledged the December $1,000 and the January $500, and if another $500 was mailed 3 days ago, there's no hiatus. I think I also reminded you that the new letter of credit does not cover the unexpended balance of the old one, but falls considerably short of it. Do your best with Carnegie, and don't wait to consider any of my intermediate suggestions, or talks about our raising half of the $200, 000 ourselves. I mean, wait for nothing. To make my suggestion available I should have to go over and see Arnott, and I don't want to until I can mention Carnegie's name to him as going in with us. My book is typewritten and ready for print. Hudden Ed Wilson, a tale. Or, those extraordinary twins, if preferable. It makes 82,500 words, 12,000 more than Huck Finn. But I don't know what to do with it. Mrs. Clemens thinks it wouldn't do to go to a pub, company or anywhere outside of our own house. We have no subscription machinery, and a book in the trade is a book thrown away, as far as money profit goes. I am in a quandary. Give me a lift out of it. I will mail the book to you, and get you to examine it, and see if it is good, or if it is bad. I think it is good, and I thought the claimant bad, when I saw it in print, but as for real judgment, I think I am destitute of it. I am writing a companion to The Prince and Pauper, which is half done and will make 200,000 words. And I have had the idea that if it were gotten up in handsome style, with many illustrations and put at a high enough price, maybe the 50 canvassers would take it and run it with that book. Would they? It could be priced anywhere from $4 up to $10, according to how it was gotten up, I suppose. I don't want it to go into a magazine. S50. See, I am having several short things typed-writered. I will send them to you presently. I like the Century and Harper's, but I don't know that I have any business to object to the Cosmopolitan if they pay as good rates. I suppose a man ought to stick to one magazine, but that may be only superstition. What do you think? S50. See, the companion to The Prince and the Pauper, mentioned in this letter, was the story of Joan of Arc, perhaps the most finished of Mark Twain's literary productions. His interest in Joan had been first awakened when, as a printer's apprentice in Hannibal, he had found blowing along the street a stray leaf from some printed story of her life. That fragment of history had pictured Joan in prison, insulted and mistreated by ruffians. It had aroused all the sympathy and indignation in the boy, Sam Clemens. Also, it had awakened his interest in history, and, indeed, in all literature. His love for the character of Joan had grown with the years, until in time he had conceived the idea of writing her story. As far back as the early 80s he had collected material for it, and had begun to make the notes. One thing and another had interfered, and he had found no opportunity for such a story. Now, however, in Florence, in the ancient villa, and in the quiet garden, looking across the vineyards and olive groves to the dream city along the Arno, he felt moved to take up the tale of the shepherd girl of France, the soldier maid, or, as he called her, the noble child, the most innocent, the most lovely, the most adorable the ages have produced. His surroundings and background would seem to have been perfect, and he must have written with considerable ease, to have completed 100,000 words in a period of not more than 6 weeks. Perhaps Hall did not even go to see Carnegie. At all events, nothing seems to have come of the idea. Once, at a later time, Mask Twain himself mentioned the matter to Carnegie, and suggested to him that it was poor financiering to put all of one's eggs into one basket, meaning into iron. But Carnegie answered, "That's a mistake. Put all your eggs into one basket and watch that basket." It was March when Clemens felt that once more his presence was demanded in America. He must see if anything could be realized from the typesetter or 50. A. L. to Fred J. Hall, in New York. March 13, '93. Dear Mr. Hall, I am busy getting ready to sail the 22D in the Kaiser Wilhelm II. I send herewith two magazine articles. The story contains 3,800 to 4,000 words. The diary contains 3,800 words. Each would make about 4 pages of the Century. The diary is a gem, if I do say it myself that shouldn't. If the Cosmopolitan wishes to pay $600 for either of them or $1, $200 for both, gather in the check, and I will use the money in America instead of breaking into your treasury. If they don't wish to trade for either, send the articles to the Century, without naming a price, and if their check isn't large enough I will call and abuse them when I come. I signed and mailed the notes yesterday. Yours, S50. See, Clemens reached New York on the 3D of April, and made a trip to Chicago, but accomplished nothing, except to visit the World's Fair, and be laid up with a severe cold. The machine situation had not progressed. The financial stringency of 1893 had brought everything to a standstill. The New York bank would advance Webster & Company no more money. So disturbed were his affairs, so disordered was everything, that sometimes he felt himself as one walking amid unrealities. A fragment of a letter to Mrs. Crane conveys this. Dreamed I was born, and grew up, and was a pilot on the Mississippi, and a miner and a journalist in Nevada, and a pilgrim in the Quaker City, and had a wife and children, and went to live in a villa at Florence, and this dream goes on and sometimes seems so real, that I almost believe it is real. I wonder if it is? But there is no way to tell, for if one applies tests they would be part of the dream too, and so would simply aid the deceit. I wish I knew, whether it is a dream or real. He saw Warner, briefly, in America, also Howells, now living in New York, but he had little time for visiting. On May 13th he sailed again for Europe on the Kaiser Wilhelm II. On the night, before sailing he sent Howells a goodbye word. To W.D. Howells, in New York City. Murray Hill Hotel, New York, May 12, 1893. Midnight. Dear Howells, I am so sorry I missed you. I am very glad to have that book for C Entertainment, and I thank you ever so much for it. I've had a little visit with Warner at last. I was getting afraid I wasn't going to have a chance to see him at all. I forgot to tell you how thoroughly I enjoyed your account of the country printing office, and how true it all was, and how intimately recognizable in all its details. But Warner was full of delight over it, and that reminded me, and I am glad, for I wanted to speak of it. You have given me a book. Annie Trumbull has sent me her book. I bought a couple of books. Mr. Hall gave me a choice German book. Laughlin gave me two bottles of whiskey, and a box of cigars. I go to sea nobly equipped. Goodbye and all good fortune attend you and yours, and upon you all I leave my benediction. Mark. Mention has already been made of the Ross home being very near to Viviani, and the association of the Ross and Clemens families. There was a fine vegetable garden on the Ross estate, and it was in the interest of it that the next letter was written to the Secretary of Agriculture. To Hon. J. Sterling Morton, in Washington, D.C. : Editorial Department, Century Magazine, Union Square, New York, April 6, 1893. To Hon. J. Sterling Morton, Dear Sir. Your petitioner, Mark Twain, a poor farmer of Connecticut indeed, the poorest one there, in the opinion of many desires a few choice breeds of seed corn, maize, and in return will zealously support the administration in all ways honorable and otherwise. To speak by the card, I want these things, to hurry to Italy to an English lady. She is a neighbor of mine outside of Florence, and has a great garden, and thinks she could raise corn for her table, if she had the right ammunition. I myself feel a warm interest in this enterprise, both on patriotic grounds, and because I have a key to that garden, which I got made from a wax impression. It is not very good soil, still I think she can grow enough for one table, and I am in a position to select the table. If you are willing to aid and abet a countryman and Gilder thinks you are, please find the signature and address of your petitioner below. Respectfully and truly yours. Mark Twain, 67 Fifth Avenue, New York. P.S. A handful of choice southern watermelon seeds would pleasantly add to that lady's employments and give my table a corresponding lift. His idea of business values had moderated considerably by the time he had returned to Florence. He was not hopeless yet, but he was clearly a good deal disheartened, anxious for freedom. To Fred J. Hall, in New York. Florence, May 30, 93. Dear Mr. Hall, you were to cable me if you sold any machine royalties, so I judge you have not succeeded. This has depressed me. I have been looking over the past year's letters and statements, and am depressed still more. I am terribly tired of business. I am by nature and disposition unfitted for it and I want to get out of it. I am standing on the Mount Morris volcano with help from the machine a long way off, doubtless a long way further off than the Connecticut Company imagines. Now here is my idea for getting out. The firm owes Mrs. Clemens and me I do not know quite how much, but it is about $170, or $175,000. One suppose
I make this guess from the documents here, whose technicalities confuse me horribly.
The firm owes other sums, but there is stock and cash assets to cover the entire indebtedness and $116, $679.220 over. Is that it? In addition, we have the 50 plates and copyright, worth more than $130. Is that correct? That is to say, we have property worth about $250. Above indebtedness, I suppose, or, by one of your estimates, $300. The greater part of the first debts to me is in notes paying 6%. The rest,
the old $70, or whatever it is,
pays no interest. Now then, will Harper or Appleton, or Putnam give me $200, for those debts, and my two-thirds interest in the firm?
The firm, of course, taking the Mount Morris, and all such obligations off my hands and leaving me clear of all responsibility.
I don't want much money. I only want first-class notes, $200, worth of them at 6%, payable monthly, yearly notes, renewable annually for 3 years, with $5, of the principal payable at the beginning and middle of each year. After that, the notes renewable annually and... Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.